It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm David Cruz. It's Mike Bloomberg versus the NRA versus with Joe Manchin and Rob Portman and other key senators as the chess pieces. New York Times columnist Joe Nocera is here. Let's talk about this latest Bloomberg gun control push and whether it's causing any tension among mayors, states, and the federal government. We may also get to some of the latest from Cyprus and even a little bit on March Madness, since Joe is the definition of Renaissance man.
Oh, I thought you were going to say I'm truly mad and March Madness is right up my alley.
You have a Michigan hat on. We could probably talk about that in a second. So he's a man who covers all sorts of beats. Joe, welcome to the show.
I want to say one thing about my hat first.
Yes.
The only reason I have this hat is because I was in Ann Arbor last week, and I bought the hat because I thought it was a nice-looking hat. And my young son, his name is Macklin, so he loves the M. I buy hats all the time. I have never had more comments about a hat in my entire life than in the 4 or 5 days since I've owned this hat.
Huh.
Everybody says, are you a Michigan fan? We're a Michigan fan. How about are they going to do against Kansas? All right, now let's get on to serious stuff.
Okay, thanks, Joe. So today, I guess it was yesterday or today, Mike Bloomberg launched a $12 million ad campaign focusing on senators who he believes might be persuaded to support a pending package of federal regulations to curb gun violence. Here's Wayne LaPierre of the NRA on Meet the Press this past Sunday.
He's going to find out this is a country of the people, by the people, and for the people. And he can't spend enough of his $27 billion to try to impose his will on the American public.
I haven't made a media buy in a long time, but is $12 million in ads actually that much money when you spread it over 13 states?
Nah, it's not. My view is that this buy has less to do with trying to persuade Americans to back him than it is a signal to congressmen who may have different views on gun laws than he does, that he is going to spend more money when it comes re-election time, and then they better watch out. We should note that in Chicago recently, Bloomberg's money unquestionably made the difference in the race for the Jesse Jackson Jr. seat, and the front runner, who was a gun supporter, lost.
Right.
And she blamed it on Bloomberg, and Bloomberg proudly took credit for that.
So the idea is that this is a warning shot.
That's my view of it. It's a warning shot.
No.
There is no, you know, gun owners hate Bloomberg. Even quote-unquote responsible gun owners who view, of which there are many, who are in favor of things like background checks and some measures to reduce gun violence. They view Bloomberg as the antithesis of their culture. And they view him as somebody as a billionaire trying to shove his ideas down their throat. He is not going to change their mind with this ad or any other ad.
Well, let's hear from a little bit of one of these ads. And since you can't see it, it features what can only be described as the most prototypical rural gun owner an advertising agency could ever have dreamed up. He's wearing camo, he has a beard, and he's sitting on the back of a pickup truck. Let's take a listen.
My dad taught me to hunt, and I'll teach my kids. I've owned a gun all my life, and I'll fight for my right to keep it. Background checks have nothing to do with taking guns away from anyone.
Tell Congress, don't protect criminals. Vote to protect gun rights and our families with comprehensive background checks. Demand action now.
He seems to be talking about the very people you were just referring to who may not be Bloomberg fans.
Right, but everybody knows that Bloomberg is behind this ad.
Yeah.
And, it is – I mean, the ad basically acknowledges the cultural divide when you think about it. The typical gun owner and I don't want to oversimplify or overstate here because there's a lot of urban guns. But, you know, the rural, blue-collar, you know – a gun is a proud possession.
Right.
And they do feel very much under assault by the forces of gun control. And they feel beleaguered and they feel paranoid, and you know, I wrote a column recently about biometric guns, i.e., the kind of guns that would only the owner
could shoot
it because it would identify his hand, or these radio frequency guns where you have to have an embedded chip in a watch or a ring or something to be able to shoot it. I can't, for the life of me, see any Second Amendment implications in that. It doesn't take anyone's gun away. It just says that the only person who can shoot it is the owner. It would immediately eliminate 99.9% of the accidental children shooting children when they find a loaded gun in the house. And yet, the blowback from that column from gun owners has been substantial. And it's all about you're trying to infringe on my rights, you're trying to take away rights, you're trying to subvert the Second Amendment. I mean, that is the attitude. Breaking down that attitude is going to take a lot more than a folksy ad paid for by Michael Bloomberg.
We'll talk a little more about those kinds of things and how to childproof a gun in a minute. But, you know, despite the all-out blitz by Bloomberg, even he's now talking about he's kind of tapering back from the scope of what he is promoting.
Right. Well, one reason for that is background checks are the least objectionable to the gun owners of all the measures out there. Believe it or not, they still are objectionable to the NRA. But, you know, the assault rifle ban.
Gone, right? Not even on the table.
And there's a lot of Democrats who are opposed to it. And you know, the argument is that this is the slippery slope. You take away our assault rifles, and you're going down this slippery slope to taking away our guns. And, you know, guys like Harry Reid, who right after Newtown said, I want to give this a second thought, they've already backed off. The Democrats just, you know, it's not necessarily the NRA per se, but it is their conservative constituents who view the government with deep suspicion and think that anything the government does is going to be the first step toward taking away their guns.
Yeah.
And Democrats just don't want to stand up to that.
Let's take a little listen to Bloomberg stepping away from the assault weapons ban.
Well, I think we are going to win this. Celebrating in advance isn't the right thing to do. We've got to go out. We've got a lot of work ahead of us. But I don't think we should give up on the assault weapons ban. But clearly, it is a more difficult issue for a lot of people. And I don't know that that reflects the NRA's power. Maybe just that people have different views about assault weapons than they do about background checks.
I was struck by that last line because we found a Gallup poll in January that showed 60% of Americans favor a federal ban similar to the one that existed from 94 to 04. So is this really about NRA's power, even if Mike Bloomberg is backing off?
Is it about NRA's power? I don't know if it is or not. Here's the thing. You know, there are a handful of issues in this country where people are willing to vote purely on the basis of one issue. So you can say that 60% of the country supports assault rifle bans, but that other 40%, they will vote for or against you solely on the basis of your stance on the assault rifle ban.
And it also has to do where that 40% is, right?
Right, it's not the coastal elites we're talking about here. We're talking about
states like Louisiana, right?
Kentucky.
Yeah, Kentucky.
Kentucky has Kentucky has issued 4 gun permits for every person in the state over the last decade. There's a lot of guns in Kentucky.
So what about background checks? Even though gun control advocates already lament the scaleback legislation, running a background check on every gun sale, would that do an awful lot to curb illegal gun use?
It would do something. You know, the idea that you have this gun show loophole, for instance, which there's no question that people with felonies on their records use to buy guns that they would not otherwise be able to get, that is a useful thing. People who have been in and out of mental hospitals, that's useful too. It does not pick up, however, people without felonies who have criminal intent, and it also doesn't pick up a lot of troubled kids. And they're, you know, like Adam Lanza at Newtown, because the mental health system in the country is a mess. And there's a lot of parents who are unwilling to turn their kids over to the mental health system, even though the kid is troubled, because they kind of know they're not going to get well served and they're going to come out of there as bad as when they went in. And so, you know, you have a lot of sort of troubled, alienated teenagers who will not be covered by this, or for that matter, will just steal their parents' guns, as happened.
That's what I was going to say. Was that the other side of that is someone will say, well, right. Adam Lanza didn't try to register a gun.
Right. So, but when you think about background checks, they are a help, and we need to acknowledge what they are. They're a help, but a small help. Assault rifle ban also would be help, but a small help. Yeah. Magazine clip, it would actually be much more important. Because what difference does it make if you shoot a .44 caliber pistol with a large magazine that, you know, that comes down, or if you shoot an assault rifle that has a .30 magazine clip? There's no difference, really, except one feels different because you're holding it different.
All right. Let's take a call right now. Richard is in Westchester. Richard, welcome to the program.
Good morning. I just wanted to call to clarify two points. One is when Bloomberg runs these ads, this is just the beginning. $12 million is nothing, but this is the beginning. And what he calls a background check is actually a federal national gun registration. Because the 40% of sales on gun show loopholes, those are old statistics from the 90s before computers. They're not really that.
Well, what's wrong? Sir, let me ask you, what's wrong with the National Gun Registry?
It will happen like New York City and David Dinkins. They'll come knocking on your door when they ban them to turn them in. That's the problem.
You're saying the government will come looking for your guns because you're on a registry?
When New York City banned so-called assault weapons, you had 90 days to turn them in. And if you didn't, the police, like in many cases did, went out looking for you because they had you register in a list. It's not a assumption or anything. And the same thing about the slippery slope. Governor Cuomo demonstrated that what he's trying to institute is what government's trying to put in on a national level was here 12 years ago, and now he moved the post. Now he redefined assault weapons, and he's an example of how the slippery slope begins.
All right, Richard, thanks for your call. Do you have anything to add on that?
I think the only thing that I would add is the caller is giving us a useful illustration of somebody who appears to be thoughtful, you know, not a gun nut, but has very strong views and is a little bit paranoid about what's going to happen if we try to regulate guns.
A lot of people see that as the nightmare scenario, right? Where the government sends out squads to scoop up everybody's guns. Right. Yeah. Let's talk about this emerging tension. You heard a little bit on the news just now between the federal and state level when it comes to gun control. Reports yesterday quoted Governor Cuomo administration officials saying that New York's strong new gun legislation was drafted in part by Bloomberg officials, the suggestion being that some of the flaws with the legislation, like the 7-bullet magazine limit, are the fault of meddling by Bloomberg. Here's Bloomberg responding to that idea yesterday.
We're working very hard to get our ideas out. I'm spending a lot of money to get our ideas out. I should be flattered if they use our ideas, but we certainly didn't force them.
What did we do?
Put a gun to their head, if you pardon the pun, and force them to write legislation?
You know, he's sort of acknowledging, when you really think about it, he's acknowledging what Cuomo said. Bloomberg is unwilling to ever say I was wrong about anything. Cuomo is unwilling to ever say I was wrong about something. So when you have a situation like this where there was obvious flaws in the legislation, you know, they're going to just play the blame game. It's, you know, for all their, both of their perception or attempts to have us perceive them as being above politics and being above this stuff.
Right.
You know, this is as petty as anything that goes on in Congress. It's actually kind of ridiculous.
You know, there's been so much talk about the Bloomberg ads and so many clips being played. That $12 million buy is almost like a $112 million buy in terms of how often these ads have been seen, no? And is that part of the rationale?
That's because it's getting all this free media.
Yeah,
it's like any other sort of contentious, famous. You know, what was the famous ad LBJ and Barry Goldwater
right.
that showed the nuclear bomb? You know, that actually never aired.
Right.
But everybody remembers it because it got so much free airtime. This is a little bit of this. I mean, to me, the amplification of the $12 million has partly to do with free media, but it also has to do with the idea that this man is worth $27 billion. And if you're a congressman in a vulnerable district who's pro-gun, Bloomberg's going to come after you. To me, that is the total sum meaning of this ad.
Yeah. So your column last Saturday was devoted to the idea of child-proofing guns.
Right.
So can you?
Yes.
Child-proof a gun?
Absolutely. It'll cost a little more. It'll cost a little more, just the same way airbags cost more when cars were forced to have them. There are several ways to do it. There is a lot of technology out there and a lot of ongoing efforts on technology, but there's a German company that is very close to being able to market a pistol that has a radio frequency. And it only shoots if the person shooting has that frequency somewhere on his body. The German company has not told how it's going to do this. There's a lot of talk about a wristwatch. A ring is certainly a possibility. You know, that's not 100% proof, childproof, because, you know, you could take the ring off and put it by the gun. And, you know, that's biometrics technology. And actually, the New Jersey Institute of Technology has been huge on this. And they've actually developed this technology where the gun handle can sense the hand of the owner, and it will only shoot if the owner has the gun, or if the owner, you know, you're allowed to have a certain number of handprints, so your wife can have it and your best friend can have it, but your kids can't.
So is anyone trying to put this into the legislation?
Yes, but put legislation aside for 1 second.
Yeah.
On March 14th, Sandy Hook Promise, the new group that has emerged out of Newtown, held a press conference on the West Coast where they announced an innovation initiative with a bunch of Silicon Valley entrepreneurs. One of the entrepreneurs is very devoted to this biometrics idea. He's talking to the guy in New Jersey, and they're trying to find a way to take this technology, which absolutely works, and turn it into something commercial.
Yeah. Are we past Newtown, the emotional impact of Newtown?
We are not. We are absolutely not. What has happened is, as one might expect, in the subsequent month, the political will has dissipated somewhat. But if you go into the country, if you talk to people, there is a commitment about this that I haven't seen. I don't think it's existed since Bobby Kennedy was shot, when they did pass substantial gun control law. There are people like John and Rebecca Bond who started an organization that is an attempt to speak directly to gun owners and to change the cultural attitudes, the same way we changed attitude towards smoking. They think that you can do the same thing with guns, so that gun owners, you don't let your kid go to somebody else's house if they have a loaded gun in the house.
Yeah.
And you ask them, and that becomes the norm. It's like drinking and driving. You know, in the old days, somebody was drunk as a skunk, and they wanted to go out to their car, and you just let them, and you didn't do anything. Now you say, sorry, you can't drive. I'll drive you home. That's a change in a cultural norm. But there's a lot of people like John and Rebecca. I think they're doing the Lord's work, and there are others like them.
Joe Nocera is columnist for the New York Times. He's also one of the panelists on WNYC's weekly economics conversation, Money Talking. Joe, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having us. Next time, March Madness.
Right. David Cruz for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. Up next, a Pennsylvania report calls into question the effectiveness of halfway houses. We'll talk about that in just a minute.